canine detection collaborative, a detection dog training trio with Stacey Barnett.
Hi.
Robin Grubel.
Hey there.
And Crystal Wing.
What's up?
With humor and a big dose of theory, our trio talks practical training advice and features interviews with top trainers and scientists.
It's Canine Detection Collaborative!
Hi, everybody. This is Stacey Barnett from Canine Detection Collaborative, and I'm here with my two amazing co-hosts, Crystal Wing.
Hello, friends.
And Robin Grubel.
Hello.
And we have a topic that we did a little bit of a teaser in our last episode that we're going to talk about this episode. And I'm really excited about this topic. We're going to be talking about all things air scent. So this is going to be an episode that's really going to be focused on search and rescue, which is live find and a lot of really kind of like a wilderness type of emphasis. So I've been going down this journey with my dog Prize, and it's been a humongous educational journey for me and just scratching the surface, but really loving every bit of the training. And I had the opportunity to have a fantastic person help me along with trying to figure out how to build the train final response and all the initial steps. And it was a whole phone a friend thing. And this is where Robin comes in. And I think when we think of Robin, we're always thinking about Robin in terms of human remains, right? Well, that, you know, searching for human remains, not anyway, that could be a really bad joke. But little known fact, Robin has an extensive background with air scent dogs. And I think I would like to start with just kind of letting everybody know like what your background was in air scent. And when we started talking about this, you're like, yeah, you do this and you do this and you do this. And I'm like,
How do you know that?
Mind blown. And yeah. And I'm like, yeah. So tell us a little bit about some of your background.
My very first search dog, Talon, actually our very, very first search and rescue certification was in area search. And it was done by Cheryl Kennedy, who, if you are an old school person in search and rescue, you know Cheryl Kennedy's name. She came from Colorado and she was one of the matrons of NASAR, National Association for Search and Rescue Canine Program. And she came to Iowa and administered some of the very, very first area cert tests as a type 3. And at that point, it was a 40-acre, one subject, hour and a half search. That's a type 3.
Okay.
Fast forward, both Talon and Moses, my next two search dogs, both ended up getting a type 1 area search certification, which is 160-acre day search and an 80-acre night search all within the same 24 hours. 160-acre search has two subjects, maybe mobile, and then the night search is a stationary subject. And Moses was one of those dogs. I literally packaged him up on a plane. We flew to California. One night we did our 80-acre area search test. We did our type 2, which is a 80-acre day search. And then that night we did our 80-acre night search. And the following morning, we did our 160-acre day search in California in a terrain I'd never been.
Wow.
And at that point, so keep in mind, this was prior to GPS, as I am now going to show my age. You're out there with a topographic map. Here's your boundaries. Go search your area. And then after I finished that, I also became I'm an evaluator for area search for several different national organizations. And so I've spent a lot of time walking out in a field behind people, some of who were lost, and we walked in circles. And as an evaluator, I'm not allowed to tell you that you're walking in circles. we just do that. And so I got to observe a lot of canine behavior, scent theory behavior. That's where actually my scent theory classes and search strategy classes were actually developed. We're following people around a field. So yeah, so that's...
You can find those webinars on canine census.
Yes, I have both of those webinars on canine census, the scent theory one and the search strategy one. Both are 4 hours a piece. So you can find them there. So yeah, you told me, hey, I want to do area search. And I'm like, well, here's how you train to find refine. And you're like, what?
So when I joined my team, right, it was right before I went down to Florida to visit my mom. And I'm like, you know, I want to keep training my dog. So that's why, you know, there was a lot of phone a friend going on because I was in Florida, you know, away from my team and everything. And I have to say, like, I had the biggest, like, kind of a mental block when it came to this, because when I started to think about train, find, or response, it always, from my lens, it always happened at the thing, right? It's like the dog finds source and they do a train, find, or response. So I had a little bit of a mental block initially about the behavior chain of a find, refine, right? And once we start, you kind of described to me how to teach it, it was like, oh, I get it, right? And then, you know, I did a lot of training on my own down in Florida and started to chain the pieces together. But as I get into it, it's like, it's really tickling my training nerd side of it, and
yes,
really, really enjoying it. And Prize is just, she's just a love. But I'm also being like getting a lot of different opinions on a lot of different things. And it's interesting. And of course you're always going to have a lot of different opinions on training in general, right?
Yes.
But I did see there are definitely veins of thought that I find interesting.
And the different veins of thought, a lot of people use runaways to start area search or start any sort of detection search whatsoever when it comes to live human stuff. And
do we want to describe what a runaway is for non...
Yeah, for our non search and rescue or trailing tracking people or anybody who does stuff that's not human odor related, a runaway is literally that somebody stands there and holds the dog, and the person who has the dog's food and or toy basically pumps them up and runs away and makes a lot of hooping and hollering noises, and then either falls down, because that's would be me, or ducks behind something and hides, right? And then you release the dog. So actually what you're doing is you're engaging prey. The dog wants to chase down the thing and get it. When in the end, I think that it's something to keep in mind that in the end, we actually want to teach our dogs when under distress.
Yeah.
Use your nose, not your eyes.
Right.
So I started thinking about that as a little bit different. If I understand that it's quote unquote drive building, but we need to be really conscious of how much is building drive than how much is overcoming drive that the dog may not have.
Mm-hmm.
And we're using, because I've also seen dogs get so used to runaways that unless the runaway was the context in which we did started the area search problem, they had no idea that they were supposed to go out and hunt.
Oh, wow.
Right. So I now encourage people to do walks in the woods, and then you find a stranger in the woods, especially with young puppies.
Mm-hmm.
Put somebody that first they know, then they don't know, out in the woods. They go out. Hopefully they have the courage and the confidence to run up to a stranger in the woods. They've used their nose to find them, and then good things happen. So that's how I kind of encourage it. And so, and you also have to be really careful if you've got the dog with the right amount drive, or they kind of happen to have pointy ears.
Oh.
Sometimes you really don't want to engage that prey.
I see Crystal making faces.
Yeah, Crystal's making faces.
So should I story time?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't heard the story. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't come into search and rescue traditionally. I came from the background of my sports. And so when you tell me that the job is that my dog has to go find somebody and then he has to alert, that's what I taught UConn. And I come from protection sport side. So the question is, what alert is the appropriate alert? So that can be another discussion. But
right. Yep.
I decided that I want it to be barking because of our terrain. It could end up that somebody has fallen somewhere, that they are down in a rocky bluff, and I don't want my dog coming have to come back to me. And I know that he's an independent dog and he's going to range. So I wanted him to stay there and bark at the person. And I know I'm confident in my ability to teach barking because that's part of protection sports. So I'm back chaining this because I don't know how traditional people teach it. I just know that this is how I would go about it coming from my background. So I teach the barking and I've passed all the stuff to join the team. And now it's the time that he has to pass his obedience and he has to pass barking, which is his trained final response, and different scenarios, the person laying down, the person sitting, you know, the person, you know, not giving any sort of feedback. And he passed all that. So now he is allowed to be on the team to start being a trainee, right? Mm-hmm. So we've done it. I'm like, yeah, the day that he got accepted on the team as a trainee, one of my teammates wanted to do a runaway. And that was something that I didn't do with him.
Oh, no.
Because, well, he's a pointy-eared dog, like Robin said.
Yeah.
And he is going to go fast and hard. And if you run away, well, that's prey.
He's going to chase you.
He's going to chase you. And he doesn't have distance yet with his bark. Like I've just started teaching. I mean, we're in the teaching phase. And the statement was made, well, he'll have to do this on a test. And I'm like, but he just started. Like we've only been back chaining. And I can't have the person have the reward even. I have to have the reward because he's going to take it from them because he's very driven for his reward. So the way that I've taught everything is you go bark at the person. And then when you bark, I give you a marker and you come back and you get the reward. Uh-huh. It's been working beautifully. And that was taken away. And it was told to me that they were going to have the reward and they were going to run away and go hide behind a tree that was maybe 20 yards away. And he was supposed to go bark at them. And I'm like, oof, I don't, he's going to really be amped. Like that's really close. And he doesn't understand distance when it comes to barking. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do this.
So when you say he doesn't understand distance, what does that mean?
He doesn't understand distance from the person.
So he has personal space issues.
Yeah, he's a dog that likes to be close. Like he's the dog that is rubs on you. He's the dog that will, I mean, you can wear him as a hat. I mean,
he's very sweet, by the way. We have to mention that.
He's yeah, super sweet. Like there's, and I never have ever worried about him hurting anybody. Uh-uh. Because he is so sweet. I mean, he's the Girl Scout dog. Like that's his nickname is the Girl Scout dog because the Girl Scout stepped on his foot and he moved away like, are you okay? You know, I mean, he's that sweet. He's that dog. Okay. So my helper took his favorite toy and I'm like, no, 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 you can't have his toy. Like, yeah, this is how you teach it. Okay. So this is another moment where you need to advocate for yourself and your dog.
Oh, no.
And I'm going to throw it out there. Advocate for the other human too.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh,
no. I wish you guys could see Stacy. Stacy's like sitting
I'm
here.
I'm like on the edge of my seat. I haven't heard the story. I'm just like, I've got all these like permutations of things that happen.
So they run a few feet away and they turn and they look at him and they go, UConn! And they shake his toy. If you've ever met UConn, he vibrates. Like you can hear the kennel shaking. He vibrates. And I'm holding him between my legs, holding onto his collar. He ramps up onto his back legs and he's standing in front of me and I'm holding his collar at my neck at this point. And he's screaming.
Oh no.
And I'm like, no, no, no. We cannot send him like this. He is frenzied. Like this is not thoughtful. I have no idea what he's going to do like this. And so they continued to run and then they hid behind the tree. And he could see all of this. He knows where they are. I mean, there's no, and I've never done this before. Like, this is not something I was familiar with. And I'm trying so hard to get him to breathe and calm down. Like, I'm holding his chest. I'm doing every technique I possibly have to get him to get back into his brain. And right as I'm starting to kind of get him to breathe again, they jump out from the tree again and yell his name and shake the toy and yell at me to let go of my dog.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Okay. This is my first experience in search and rescue. And these, they're very talented trainers that know what they're doing. And I know this moment so clearly because he gets back on his back legs again. He's trembling just with excitement. He's screaming. And she yells, "Let go of him." And I just let go. And it was that moment where you go, "Oh shit." And I just watched as he ran. And all I could see was tree. And I could see Yukon. And he's the dog that jumps on the roof of my house. Okay. He's very athletic. He didn't know what to do with himself. And I knew that. Like, he wasn't in his mind. And that's why I always say, get their focus, become a team before you let them go do the thing. He jumped straight in the air, vertical, at least 7 feet. And then all of a sudden, it was like a kangaroo kicking. And he just kicked his back legs with full force, just oof. And all of a sudden, I see my helper who just got impacted with both of his back feet on both fronts of the shoulders. And the person just goes rolling down the hill.
Oh, no, no.
And it's on a hill. Okay. Oh, no. And so then what does my dog do? I have to tell you, I'm proud of my dog. You know what he does?
Did he
follows her as she's rolling down the hill, barking at her. So you have to know that the helper, who is now hurt, and I don't know this at the time, they're hurting because they just got kicked, like a donkey kick in the air, and they've rolled down a hill in slow motion, and my dog has now chased them and barked at them. They're pissed, and I don't know what to do, and I'm like, well, he did the right thing. So I threw my marker word out, and I said, "Mark," which means come back and get the toy from me, because I'm trying to get him away from this situation. Oh. And he barked, and he was supposed to bark. And I was proud of him that he barked a rolling human. He's never seen that picture either. So pretty much the first day of getting on the team was the first day that we went on probation or whatever that thing is, you know, where you're like
in trouble.
You're kind of in trouble. Yeah.
Wow. And, because you got to use wilderness first aid at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I learned a very valuable lesson about runaways that day. Oh, that was something that really wasn't in the cards for Yukon.
Wow. Yeah.
And that we've always heard that runaways are the way that you teach it, and it's a way.
Yeah.
And so I really just think that the dogs can learn some really bad habits that way. And I like starting them out more of a thoughtful process on being able to use your nose, not your eyeballs.
And humans stink. They put off so much odor. After having my friends go hide for him, there was no reason that he needed to see anybody.
I mean,
no. I just had to point him in kind of the right direction. And he would go flying out, and he could be running at a full sprint and have someone that's only been there for a few minutes and would totally hit their odor and go flying over to them. And it was so impressive to watch that. It's like, well, give them the chance to do that. But I knew the hardest part was teaching the trained final response. That was the hardest part that I knew that I had to just work on. And that's what I kept working on.
Yep. That's what I worked on in Florida. Thanks to Rob.
Because with the whole concept of back chaining and putting cues, because when I taught area search for quite a while before I actually taught cadaver, right? I was known as an area search instructor. It took a little while to get transferred over to cadaver, which is kind of funny and entertaining now. But what literally ended up happening, I would go teach at the Canine Search and Recovery Conference every year, which is a fabulous organization. If you're doing search and rescue and you can be a member because they put on a really nice seminar for people.
Which I am on a wait list.
You're on a wait list to
I'm
get on.
A wait list. I'm on a wait list.
Right. One of the nice things is they'd have the Border Patrol show up And so a couple of years, I ended up with a brand new minted Border Patrol trainer who had just finished their training program, and it's their BorStar program. So it's Border Patrol Search and Rescue. And we would end up talking through how to teach, you know, what are the components of an area search dog. I believe his name was Justin, was talking through, and Robert Naziska was another one that I got to learn from, and he's fabulous too. And the dog moves out with purpose. The dog hunts. The dog finds the person. The dog returns to the handler, does a specific behavior, and then leads the handler back to the subject. That's a 6-step behavior chain.
Well, then they have to, once they get to the subject, return back to the handler. The handler is slow.
Right.
Yeah. So they have to kind of ping pong, right?
Because we're not all in shape Border Patrol agents that can sprint after our dogs.
Right.
Right. So that's a find, refine behavior chain. That's a lot of steps.
That's complicated.
And I'll tell you, after walking behind many, many area search dogs, I started the piece that seemed to always break was the come back and tell the handler. Because I distinctly remember one dog, I saw that dog, and because one of the criteria as an evaluator I have is that my subjects are not visible to the humans. And so I know where they're placed.
Right.
I watched that dog walk in 6 different times to the subject, come back to the handler, and not do a behavior that the handler could describe. And the handler continued to search their area.
Wow.
Right. And so it became one of my things as I'm walking around following people is thinking about how to break down that behavior chain so that A, I could work on it by myself.
Yep.
Because that's one of the hardest things to do as an area search handler is to train, because finding other people to go out and hide in the woods with the ticks is hard. So that's where I diced it up. And then, you know, talking to the nice guys from the Border Patrol and watching a lot of people, that's where I came up with the come back to me and do a behavior is on a verbal cue.
Yep.
I've decided to find people. We just got to go to book clubs.
Book clubs?
Oh.
Yeah. Because I'm telling you, almost every time that I was out in the woods, I was always reading. It was such a great place to just go take my book and go hide.
Huh.
And then I would read for hours. It was amazing. It was the most peaceful.
Yes.
I read Sirotuck, I think, 3 times.
Which is a very good use of your time.
Yeah. I mean, so I used that. I did my FEMA testing stuff. I did that's what I did with my time out there was.
Oh, that didn't put you to sleep, the ICS stuff?
No, because I was excited waiting for the dog to come find me. So, I mean, that I loved it. It's kind of like tracking for me, you know? So it's that downtime. It's so, I feel like I very rarely have that kind of downtime. And so I'm just thinking like, we should talk to book clubs and see if we could get them to come out and sit in the woods and read their books.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea. Yeah. I mean, in this back training, this is what you told me to do. So here I am I was by myself. I'm by myself a lot. Although right now I'm fortunate in that one of my teammates is also training an area search dog, and she also has weekday daytime sometimes available. So we're like going out and hiding for each other. But that was the hard part. I was down in Florida, and there I was, you know, trying to figure out like how to start my dog, because I didn't want to just like come back and like have done nothing. And Robin's like, well, you could do this on your own. And I'm just sitting here going, wait. Now I'm training my dog to find somebody. And you're saying I can train by myself?
I train, Talon was a find, refine dog. He had a come back and lie down. Moses, because we also did FEMA work, was a bark and hold. So I've done both.
Right.
And so I taught Talon his find refine predominantly out on our nightly walks by just putting, and I, at that point I was doing martial arts. So I used the word begin in Korean because it was a throwaway cue. So to him, si ja meant come back to me and lie down. And then all you do, here's me, all you do, as you can't see out in podcast land of the air quotes that I just did, is literally new cue is running into the person, you know, the ones that you don't do runaways for. And now your puppy, who is about 10 months old, you've been doing all of this work on come back and lie down or come back and sit. They run out to find the person in the woods because the last couple of times they did that, they got cookies. And so they think people in the woods are awesome. So they run out to that person. And all of a sudden, this cue comes from behind them from their handler, which they now have at least 300 repetitions because you've been putting that many beans in your jelly bean jar.
Yep. And go listen to our podcast episode on the last one. You'll find out about the jelly.
Exactly. You come running back to me and you get your reinforcement. And so that 10-month-old puppy is like, oh, new cue is finding a person in the woods. Old cue happens. I run back to my mom or dad and I get my thing. That's how you start chaining all of it together. And then I spend a long time. I think Stacy was like, how long do I spend on they come back to me? She comes back to me and does her a down. And I'm like, till the point when she comes back to you and lies down and you can be bent over to tie your shoe and she will still come back to you and lie down.
And I was doing that, right? I'd be sitting on a bench. I was up, like I was training at the place I had available because I didn't want to be anywhere near alligators. I was in Florida. I would go to kind of like this park and they had a lot of ball fields and everything. And nobody was really there during the day. So I just take her like off leash and just kind of keep going. And she'd kind of range out. And I use the word return. So return for her is a recall plus a down at my feet. So I taught her that, and I use a ball because she would walk on water for her ball, right? So she'd be anywhere, and I'd put myself into a position. Like I also started to do this like from a stay, so I was like actually reinforcing the stays by doing this, where I'd kind of put her something out of sight, and I'd go and I'd sit on a bench or I'd climb up in a bleacher. One time I was like sitting in a bleacher. It was so funny. She went up on the bleacher and she's literally trying to figure out how to lay down on the bleacher. I was up in an announcer's booth the one time. Sometimes, you know, I had my back turned toward her. Sometimes I'm squatting. Sometimes I'm sitting. And I did all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that her recall, her general recall really improved through all of this also because of all this repetition of coming back to me and getting a reward and getting that and changing it from come and then down to changing the words and just making it all one cue is actually very easy. So now, you know, if I'm also in a situation where she finds somebody and I feel like she's had a very challenge, like we've upped the challenge a lot for her to actually find the person. Now I can use the word return so that I can actually lower that criteria just a little bit in that situation for her to run back and give me a beautiful train final response. So she runs back, she slams down into a down and I'm, this is amazing. This is like, and it's fun. It's fun training.
Right. And people often, when I ask them, what's the most important part for an area search dog? And they're like, the dog finds the person. And I'm like, no. And my answer is no. It's the fact that the dog will tell you that they found the person. That's actually the most important part of the whole chain. So especially for a find refine dog, because they can go in and they can find the person. But if you continue to walk, and they're like, oh yeah, mom doesn't care. One of my absolute, when I'm evaluating somebody and I can actually look at the team and go, oh my God, this dog absolutely positively knows its job is when, because of whatever scenting conditions are happening, the handler happens to be walking away from the subject when the dog has found the subject. And if the dog will either block the handler to do their trained final response or do their trained final response to their handler's back, I was like, this team dog knows the assignment. We're good.
Yep.
So I will also, for those of out there that use the bump alert for your trained final response, you are stronger people than me. Because I couldn't handle, I mean, the whole concept of having a 50-pound fur missile aimed at me, let alone Moses, he was 72 pounds at fighting weight.
Yeah.
The whole concept of him bouncing off me to do a find, refine, I would have ended up having knee surgery significantly sooner. And so I would strongly encourage people who do a bump, find, refine to really think of do an alternative behavior, because one, it's really hard on the humans. Two, you spend a lifetime teaching your dog, don't jump on you. And now you want to overcome all of that training to when somebody else's life depends on it, that the dog's going to jump on you. And three, in training, you brace for your dog to hit you when you're doing a trained final response. That brace actually becomes a cue because they can read it. And so it is hard. And I saw this all the time in testing for people who were doing bump, find, refines. Now, there are people out there who have done it really successfully and are really, really good at it. And I absolutely know that. But I also know some of those people who are really, really good at it who have actually been knocked over a log. I know a Border Patrol agent who ended up in freezing water because they happened and like him and the dog were like hypothermic type of stuff.
Oh my gosh.
Right. So it's actually a safety issue. And for those of you who think about the whole concept of it slows the dog's momentum to have them do something like a sit or a down, think of the whole thing as the dog comes in and does a skidding, sliding sit or a skidding, sliding down. And they're laying there and they're vibrating. And literally what they're doing is all of that energy is being contained so that when you say, show me, it's going to explode back to the person in the direction that you want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people are like, well, we like a Bringsel alert. And so a Bringsel alert is where the dog picks something up in its mouth, whether it's attached to the dog's collar or where it's attached to the human that they come back and they tug on it. That's a whole nother set of behaviors that I then have to teach and maintain. And so I'm like, dude, do a sit or a down.
So if you're listening and you're like, I'm not following this because you don't do search and rescue, I'm just an explanation. So instead of like I was talking about how Prize runs back and then lays down in front of me, a body bump would be the dog runs back and then basically bumps you with their body on your body. So instead of the down, it's kind of like a jump up and bump.
Right. Or a slam or, I mean, I know men who have worn fanny packs in strategic locations.
Oh, no.
Right.
Where? Oh, no.
Because oh, their no. dogs would hit there. Right. And so, yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Right. So, I mean, just.
Well, funny if you're not a guy.
Yeah. Funny if you're not a guy.
Well, it's funny for me. Like, I don't have that issue. So I'm just like laughing. But.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's bump alerts. I will say they're an acquired taste.
I mean, I know some people do them really successfully. And I know people that do it really successfully. I was just, for me, looking at the body mass. I mean, Prize is only 53 pounds, but she's solid 53. And she's really athletic. And I'm, you know, I've got this back that I've worked really, really hard on having the strength to like just get out and do this. I don't need to be hit in the wrong way. And I would personally end up to be a liability. So,
well, and somebody with more of love of math than me could probably do the calculations. If you had a 65-pound mass hurtling at you at 15 miles an hour, what that actual force is.
15 miles an hour could be a slow estimate.
I didn't actually.
Yeah,
that's not a math thing for me. And then we also have the other side of the story where everybody's like, you can't do a bark alert. You can't do a bark alert because it will scare small children. Yeah, absolutely. It will scare small children. I mean, I think about, well, okay, even Yukon.
They're probably pretty scared out there all by themselves.
Well, I think of Yukon. Yukon's a marshmallow, right? But he's also a pointy-eared dog.
Yeah, yeah.
But
okay, one ear is floppy now, so
well, true.
Okay, true. But I even think of Moses. Moses was a yellow lab golden retriever mix.
Yeah.
He comes up and stands 4 feet away from you and barks at you. It's scary.
Yeah.
And so I have a lot of people when they would talk, well, I want to do a bark alert. I want to do a bark alert. And I'm like, why? Mm-hmm. And because my personal thing is FEMA people have to do a bark alert because that's mandated by the FEMA system. I've also watched a dog that was a good 400 to 500 yards away from me. The only way we could tell it had a bark and hold, the only way we could tell that it was actually doing its train final response is because we knew that the dog bounced up and down when it barked.
Oh, couldn't hear it?
And we couldn't hear it because of the wind direction.
Yeah.
And so
I was worried with Prize. It was like either I wouldn't hear it or I wouldn't be able to sustain that number of barks until I got there. Of course, I mean, I know you could look at the GPS and the dog hasn't moved, but I mean, then you're relying on the technology part of it.
Right.
I don't know if I made the right decision doing the find refine. Like that's kind of it's a question because I know when she has to find me again, if the wind is shifted, she's got to literally, if she doesn't know where I am, she literally has to find me again.
Right.
And I saw where the wind shifted and when she had to go and find the person subject again. And she's like, where the heck did this person go?
A heck. I learned from the Border Patrol guys because when their dog is out searching, well, and remember, we did a lot of this before GPS was really popular and the GPS collars, so you couldn't keep track of your dog, right? So you were truly listening for a bell and whatever.
Yeah.
But they had their leash strapped around them and they would actually stand there and snap their leash.
Oh, wow.
The fastener on their leash to make that clicking noise of the snap.
Okay.
So hoping that that would provide the dog with a triangulation opportunity that they could hear them, not just smell them.
No, I have a friend of mine I was talking to, and she said she used to put bells on her shoes.
Mm.
And so she would actually stamp her feet so that the dog could also hear and come back. I'm like, that's actually pretty brilliant. Cause once I realized like how thick our woods get, I'm like, oh yeah, you need a bell. And we have black bear and black bear don't want to tangle with you, but it just helps to at least not surprise them.
Yes.
So Prize has a bell. And then here I am, I'm just trying to learn how to, you know, search in the dark and everything. And at least I know I can hear where that bell is kind of coming from. But I've also seen her like all this or not seen her, but she again has to try to figure out how to get to me. And I mean, somehow that's that complication and then that behavior chain, like now you have like a pause in your behavior chain as she tries to
problem solve it.
Yeah. It's really, I mean, when you start thinking about like just how complicated it is, it's just kind of nuts.
And I think one of the things that's really interesting, and I know the Mondio ring people and the French ring people have to do this at anybody that does complex behavior chains that last a really, really long time. So I think about the dog sport people. They don't go out and train the whole entire chain. And Crystal, correct me if they don't train the whole entire chain every single time.
I mean, it depends on the person.
Okay.
Some people do. You know how that goes. I do not.
Right. And okay, so you don't. you train sections of it and then you reinforce like several pieces in that section.
So for barking, I can give that as an instance because I needed to have a duration bark for him to do that. And for IGP, you have to have duration barking at a helper and a blind. If I want to work on just barking, then I do like a ladder approach of barking. So when I'm first teaching it, can you bark once? Okay, two ball, come back. Can you bark twice? Two ball. Can you bark three times? Two ball. Can you bark two times? Can you bark one time and repeat? And I worked that all the way until I did 25 barks. We'd play two ball, 25 barks, two ball, 75 barks, two ball, 100 barks, two ball, then 75, then 50, then 25. That's a lot of barking.
That's a lot of barking.
Yeah.
But what that's doing is it's working on the conditioning of, can you go run your butt off and then sustain that amount of barking, because that's a different kind of conditioning than just going and running.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about that as a piece of the chain of building the duration of the barking, of doing that ladder work, but also of getting my behavior and my conditioning both at the same time. I don't know if that's what you're looking for.
Well, it does, because it goes back to what Stacy was just talking about. She sent Prize out on a search. Prize has went and found her subject. And now Prize is trying to work her way back to her. And all of a sudden, that just became really, really complicated. Mm-hmm. You know what? As a trainer in that particular situation, if your dog is like, oh my gosh, I've now got to go over the mountains and through the woods, you know, and all sorts of things to get back to you. And I come back and I do this stellar down.
I reward the heck out of that. And I may at least stop at that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Put your jelly beans in that jar.
Yep. I did that. I put my jelly beans in that one. We had a situation where we did a search and she had to deal with, because it was kind of a, this like a little extra scenario or whatever, where she had to deal with a lot more human odor than she had ever dealt with on a search before. And in a training, you know, training search clearly. And so, and then when she found the two subjects, because they were together, she couldn't figure out how to get back to me. I had gotten stuck in like this thicket with all these, this, like, I literally couldn't get out and she couldn't get back to me. So then finally, when she found me and I saw her go back and she went in with the subjects, at that point, I literally cued the final, because I'm like, you've already kind of overcome a lot to do this. I cued return. She came, ran down, gave me the, you know, ran back, gave me the down. I played ball with her and I stopped.
Right.
Instead of doing the ping pong, which she knows how to do.
Right. And that it goes back to dog training, that sometimes you pick whichever chain that you piece in that whole big long chain that you was absolutely stellar. Reinforce that piece, knowing that your next training session, you can put the whole thing back together. And it's perfectly fine. That one time of reinforcing just that one piece is not going to break it.
And then when we were talking about balancing and the jelly beans, right?
Right.
And so this whole complicated behavior chain of the dog going out, finding the person, returning back to the handler, doing a behavior, finding the show me, goes back to the subject, returns, does the behavior, all building back in that. If you have a higher reinforcement for one piece of that, it can make the other pieces more difficult to achieve. So Prize got to be so, there was the whole victim loyalty thing, right?
Yes.
So she was literally like, I found you. I don't want to leave you. You have cookies. You have balls, right?
Yeah.
I usually use cookies middle and then a ball at the end. And then she's like, I don't really want to leave you because you have all this good stuff. So I literally had to rebalance some of that, putting some jelly beans, the jelly beans in the different jars.
Right.
So, and I'm anticipating that's going to have to shift and get rebalanced as we go through our training.
It will probably, and people think that all of a sudden, oh my God, you're done, right? Hmm. And no, you're actually having to rebalance consistently until the whole chain really becomes fluent.
Yeah.
But then
I could see that.
We're not dealing with a robot. We're dealing with a dog who has its own set of motivators.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just need to always be conscious of the fact that we can reinforce at any point along the chain. You know what? If it's a particularly difficult scent theory problem, have your subject just play with the dog. You got there. That's fantastic, right?
Right.
That's perfectly. Imagine Price's little brain if on a really difficult search scent theory problem, if you had the person reward her when she got there, her brain would explode.
Well, you know, I simplified it her first time doing it, you know, anything at night, right? Anything like that. And it was just, you know, when things were really just really tough, where, you know, we're working in a slightly larger area or whatever. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, yeah. Night searching is its whole thing, own thing. And the other thing I really want people to understand is I tell you what works here in Iowa, and then you go into Montana or places out west when their operational level searches are 360 acres in 4 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, your dog's got to move. You have to understand your topography. You have to understand all of those things. And then you go to places like New Jersey and they're like, ah, yeah.
Like I can't see 20 feet in front of me because the briars and the thickets are so thick.
Right.
You know, like, where's my dog? It's like literally 20 feet in front of me. I can't see her.
Yeah. 40 acres in your neck of the woods is totally different than 40 acres in my neck of the woods. So it gets into this whole sort of interesting thing where it's not a one size fits all.
And that's why I preferred doing the bark, because I knew that I had GPS on my side. I also have a dog that has a duration bark, and I know that I'm in tough terrain that I don't want to take a chance of him hurting himself trying to get back to me. So those were some of the things that I thought about where I'm like, you know what? I'll take that couple minutes of the individual potentially being frightened for the sake of finding them and helping them and getting them back to where they need to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Agreed. And I don't, like I said, I don't even know if I picked the right, you know, the right in air quotes.
No, you did. Response, it's but... that's again, though, that's the individual that we just kind of have been talking about. I think it's
right. And some of it is, you know, we also, there was just that paper released that talks about the live human odor stuff.
Oh my gosh, that was so fascinating.
Right.
Fascinating. Yes.
And
we'll put a link in the show notes so you guys can.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes. And basically, what we kind of proved with that is that the way that the test was set up, it was the fact that dogs will alert to respiration and not necessarily a body.
That blew my mind. It blew my mind. Yeah.
FEMA level cadaver dogs have been doing this forever.
And it was tested based off of like.
Right. Some stuff that they did. And so basically we set it up with Nathan Hall's lab down in at Texas Tech that we could actually do that. And what it becomes an interesting conversation for your area search people with, if the person that you are searching for is actually deceased, now your dog is actually still alerting to, there is human odor there. There's not respiration. But then another whole scientific question is, when does a live turn to dead?
Right. When do they start smelling like...
Right. Enough that cadaver. Your cadaver dogs will then find the full body.
Right.
And so there's a little bit for... And some of this depends on how you get deployed. Mm-hmm. Right. That's a big thing on how, you know, when I was running an area search dog, to a certain extent, it was really important for my area search dog to at least recognize and respond to, not just recognize, they have to respond to cadaver, large source cadaver. We're not talking forensics, smears, blood stuff, right? So yes, and remember, dogs know two odors, odors they get reinforced for and odors that they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, we'll include if you want to follow the nerd herd.
Yeah.
put that link in the show notes.
Yeah. It just, when I read that, I'm like, oh, because, you know, sometimes we think that dogs are responding to one stimuli and that's not necessarily what they're responding to.
Right.
So we can be like, well, yeah, you know, they're clearly it's a human and they see the human. I think it's helpful, at least from the wilderness side of it, they at least see the person.
Yes.
So they have a few more data points, right? Mm-hmm. Than your disaster dog. Like your disaster dog really doesn't have that part of it as a data point. But we also don't truly know what the dog learns. I mean, the dogs will surprise you. And I've
seen wilderness dogs who wouldn't respond to the subject unless the subject looked at them. So they were actually responding to eye contact.
Yeah. I mean, we just really don't know, right?
Mm-hmm.
It really, really is fascinating.
I thought it was cool trying to think of all the different things that I could have my hider do, you know, like roll down a hill or or climb up a tree or hide under a blanket or walk away or start swinging. Because I mean, dementia patients, that's a lot of what we would find, you know, and we'd be called out for. So it's like, what happens if they get scared or confused and they get combative? So, I mean, I tried to have them do just about everything and starting that straight away.
So that gets into your generalization, right? So if you're not generalizing as you're training,
right,
and changing things up, you know, your dog may not respond.
You think that they would. Yeah.
I even played my verb game that I play with reinforcement. And so you have it do a random verb generator. And so I would tell my hider to go out and they would do a random verb generator. And then I said, I want you to, however you can figure it out, to act like that verb. And that really made for some fun.
I bet. Oh my gosh. Oh my God. We haven't quite gotten there with prize yet. So
let's do takeaways.
Okay.
Can I go first? I talked too much. That's my takeaway.
That's your takeaway?
I talked too much. And
well, you're the expert on this, so stop.
Yeah, I have lots of opinions and it's very interesting for people. I train for how you deploy. So anyway, that's my takeaway.
My takeaway is I really miss doing area search. I'm excited about the opportunity that ARSA gives, that UConn will get to play area search again, possibly. I would say it is his most favorite thing to do. It is just so much fun and the joy that he has getting to do that. We play it occasionally still. And I say play because we're not doing it for search and rescue. It's not serious stuff for him at all, but it's so much fun. So if you don't want to do a SAR team and you're like, huh, this area search stuff sounds interesting, then consider looking up doing IPOR or the RH programs at the USCA and listen to the episode we had with Melissa Stagnaro about ARSA.
Yes.
Absolutely. So my takeaway is that it's a lot of fun, but it's really complicated. But that for me is part of the exciting part of it. And I love just kind of figuring out all those permutations. And it's just been, I've just started this journey and I'm just so excited to do this with this such an amazing dog. And I'm looking forward to the future with just growing with her.
It's fun watching your journey.
Yes, I agree. I like being the phone a friend on that too, because I get to relive some things and be like, oh, I'm glad it's you doing it, not me. Okay, everybody, thank you for listening and go train.
Canine Detection Collaborative!
We appreciate the time you spend with us. If you liked this episode, not only should you follow us so you don't miss the next one, but please also rate and review us in your favorite podcast app. For info on collaborating with us, go to caninedetectioncollaborative.com. That's K9detectioncollaborative.com, where you can find our socials and pick up our latest monthly freebie. Join us again to talk training in the next episode.